Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there. Good morning, everybody. Welcome in. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester will be in shortly. We are getting you ready for the weekend. Big college football weekend. A little appetizer last night for you. That we can get to any takeaways from the first real full night of college football. Is it sort of a college football celebration weekend? There are games tonight, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It is just all over the place, and we're here for it. KU plays tonight. K-State plays tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll be ready for it. The Royals also begin a pretty critical series at home this weekend, and we'll continue to dive into the Chiefs now less than a week away from their opening game out in Brazil. It's all on tap for you today, and we're excited to bring it to you. So is Wichita Brewing Company. What's on tap? Brought to you by WBC, featuring Yumkin Pumpkin Ale, WBC's most popular seasonal beer that's made with actual pumpkin and served with a spiced rim. Yumkin Pumpkin, now available at Wichita Brewing Company. Pizza and beer made here. Max Power has your phone lines ready at 869-1240. We're watching the video streams on Facebook, YouTube, and X for your comments. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected, and thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy birthday, by the way, to my buddy Dave Wilson, who does the morning show on, not to you, Dave Wilson does the morning show over on KUIN 103.7. So he's in the studio right next to me. Had to go wish him a happy birthday. So
happy birthday,
yeah,
Dave.
Happy birthday, Dave. Appreciate that. Hey, good Friday. Yeah, it's a good day. We've got college football. Had college football last night. Nebraska-Cincinnati was the marquee matchup at Arrowhead. A bunch of college football, you know, later this weekend. So I'm excited to get right into it.
Oh, and there was a little trade we got to talk about.
There was?
In the NFL. Yeah, I think
did something.
So.
Just, did something happen?
Something happened. We'll get to that as well. I watched Nebraska fans fill Arrowhead Stadium last night and just wonder, like, why has Nebraska in this era of college football not been able to be one of the best teams in the country? Why are Michigan and Ohio State having so much success and Nebraska isn't? It doesn't make any sense to me. They you would imagine, have all the resources on the planet to be good. Filled Arrowhead Stadium. It, however many people, 70,000 people drive 3 hours to go fill Arrowhead on a Thursday night in August. What is taking them so long? But they do sneak out of there with a win against Cincinnati. So I thought Cincinnati was going to just shatter their hearts again. Our guy, PJ Glasser, we made him, you know, we asked him about that. That wasn't even one of his favorite games, but he got it right. He said, take the points in Cincinnati. And one of his favorite bets, the USF game, man, he nailed that game. They crushed Boise State. And get ready for that kind of madness this weekend, by the way. Yeah, Boise State was ranked. They lost Genty. Like, all these teams are going to be so different than they were a year ago. It feels like a total crapshoot to me.
Yeah, and isn't that the number one reason why, as far as like preseason polling, like it just doesn't matter anymore for the most part, honestly, because we just don't know a lot about these teams when they lose so much and they're bringing in a bunch of new players and players are leaving. Like, it's just a total dart throw for the most part. I mean, maybe you can look at the top five or maybe even top 10 teams and have a decent idea about them, but after that, it's all wild and up in the air. And I think Boise State, that was a prime example of that last night, that, you know, I think that based on their success a year ago and getting into the CFP and all of that, I think, you know, the pollsters felt like they needed to be somewhere in the top 25, so they barely squeaked their way in. They're not a top 25 team, obviously, after the game last night against USF.
I think that they get it right sometimes. Iowa State and Kansas State feels like they probably got it right. But yeah, we don't know. We don't know anything about these teams. And we'll find out probably over the first three or four. And it's going to take, we're not going to learn anything about KU when they play Wagner. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that doesn't help us much either. So it's going to take a little time to sort that stuff out. But I thought it was a pretty entertaining night of college football. I'll be perfectly honest. I am not, there's college football on in any capacity. I must watch it all the time. That's not me with college football. I will watch KU and K-State every time they play. I will watch the Big 12 as sort of the rest, and then I'll try to catch the marquee games. That's kind of it for me. So, like, in normal circumstances, I'm not spending a second with Nebraska-Cincinnati. I'm not watching Wisconsin wondering what's taking their offense so long to get going.
Jeff Grimes. Jeff Grimes. That's what it is.
That's funny. I didn't even think about that. But it's that opening night. It kind of had a nice feel to it. I'll watch them every time they're on the field with the NFL. Like, I'll watch every NFL game. But it was good to get college football back. And, I thought it was a pretty good, like after the kind of fake opening salvo of the week zero, which meant something to us this year, of course, because K-State and KU both played, and K-State played one of the biggest games of the year. It was nice to get it back. It was nice to have that many games. And I do like this. Do they normally do this? I don't feel like they do. And maybe it doesn't time out where we get a bunch of games on Thursday. We get a bunch of games on a Friday. There's games into Sunday. Like, I like this through the Labor Day weekend thing. And I feel like it's kind of new. Have we had this in the past?
This isn't like a brand new thing. I can't tell you how many years it's gone back, but the fact that it's the final weekend without the NFL, it's college football dominating it. And with Labor Day weekend and all of that, you know, you've got games lined up. I remember in previous years there being a Sunday night primetime college football game on Labor Day weekend. I remember there being a couple of games on Labor Day, which I know that's happening again, you know, this year with North Carolina and TCU on Monday. I think this, it might be fairly new, but I don't think it's brand new.
Maybe it just didn't have the bigger kind of games on that Thursday. I don't know. Either way, it was nice to see. One way or the other, I was glad to have it. Okay. Let's get you set up. We got to talk about this, Mike Parsons trade when we come back, because once we get into the second
hour,
do
you mean Michael Parsons or Micah Parsons?
Michael Parsons trade, there's just so much good stuff here. As we go out, Jeremy Avery vying for a college golf scholarship awarded to the state championship winner while caring for his autistic brother, but his rival is doing anything to win. Now he must choose between realizing his dreams or standing by his brother. The Short Game, it's in theaters today, and it is your last chance to win a pair of tickets. Go to kfhradio.com, click on the contest tab, and go to the Short Game contest if you'd like to enter to win a pair of tickets for tomorrow. The movie premieres today. The winners will be selected tomorrow. I think you can probably use the tickets a little more flexible, but we'll pick some winners. kfhradio.com, contest tab, the Short Game contest is where you can go to get that. We will also give away some Swing 365 golf today. We'll give away some HTO today, so make sure you're locked in and tuning in for your opportunities to win those. We will get you ready for the Royals weekend as well. We got a jam-packed show. We're going to talk a little Ryder Cup today, too. When is the Ryder Cup? When does that start?
A couple weeks from now. I think it's like late September, so we've got a little bit of time, but they just named the Ryder Cup team. Keegan Bradley's the captain, so a lot of intrigue about if the U.S. can get it done.
Our guy Eric Johnson going to come in. Our golf guy is going to come in and help us look ahead to the Ryder Cup. So we'll have all that for you today when we come back, though. Michael Parsons. Micah is traded to the Packers. We'll have that next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Sports Talk on KFH, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus, which, of course, comes to you for 12 News, KWCH, where you can find us right now on 12 News Connected. Appreciate that from them. Tommy, we come back in, and the big trade yesterday finally happens. Dallas moves Micah Parsons for Kenny Clark and two first-round picks, 26 and 27. And Micah Parsons is now a Green Bay Packer, signing a new deal for $47 million a year, setting the market now for defensive players, all players, not quarterbacks, and even more than most quarterbacks in the league. Micah Parsons is a Green Bay Packer. And the thing that has seemed inevitable in some ways, but some people thought might be crazy because Parsons is on a trajectory unlike many players ever have been in his young career, is now gone. Dallas moves him out. And it's funny, I've had people like checking in on me as a Cowboys fan. I'm like, guys, this is what I wanted to happen all along. I didn't even think they'd be able to get a return like this. A Pro Bowler and two firsts? Yes, this is exactly what Dallas needed to do. It's a great trade for Dallas. I mean, Micah Parsons is awesome, and I am genuinely sad to see him go. This was a situational thing, though. He, like, the Cowboys were not going to win a Super Bowl paying Micah Parsons $47 million a year. As great as he is, wasn't going to happen. Probably isn't going to happen anyway, but it definitely wasn't going to happen with $150 million going to three players when they're just not deep enough to withstand that. So as a Cowboys fan, like, I'm pumped for this. I know there's a lot of upset people, and I know Micah Parsons may be in the Hall of Fame staring at Jerry Jones one day. But man, it wasn't going to work. It was the right business decision.
Yeah, I mean, you were the first person I thought of when the trade happened yesterday. I texted you right away because I figured you were thrilled about it because you've been pretty clear and pretty steadfast in your belief that this is what the Cowboys needed to do was to try to get a return and try to move on from Micah Parsons. And, I think that I've seen people draw parallels between this and the Mavericks trading Luka Doncic, but it's two totally different situations. Like, it's apples and oranges. And look, I understand the star power of those two guys and how Dallas has just been, they've walked away from the biggest stars that their respective teams have seen in one calendar year is wild, but it's different entirely because if you look at the return that the Mavs got for Doncic, and then you look at the return that the Cowboys got for Micah Parsons, The Parsons trade is significantly better for the Cowboys than the Doncic trade, I think, is for the Mavericks. So they're not the same whatsoever. No, they're not the same. I understand the parallel.
They shopped Parsons around.
Yeah,
like Nico Harrison would have traded him, I told, to the Eagles for a sixth.
Yeah,
without right. Fielding offers from anybody else. Yeah. Like that's the equivalent to that trade. No, they shopped him. They got two firsts and a Pro Bowler. But the big thing for me is they saved $47 million. And it's not like a knock on Parsons. I've told you this for months. As soon as this situation, really as soon as TJ Watt was going to get paid, I'm like, well, the Steelers aren't going to do anything paying TJ Watt $45 million a year. Like the edge rusher to me is not the position that warrants it. Quarterback certainly does. Micah Parsons is now like the 10th highest paid player in football. That's ahead of lots of quarterbacks. He'll make more money than than Patrick Mahomes on an annual basis. He'll make more money than Matthew Stafford on an annual basis. He'll make more money than Jamar Chase, Kirk Cousins, Kyler Murray. Like, it's just that it's not. Now, let me also say before we get further into this, I do think the Packers are the kind of team to try it, right? They are close enough where you are adding one of the best players in football. And I don't know if an edge, I mean, their odds went from 20 to 1 to 14 to 1. Their odds to win to the division jumped pretty significantly. Like, this is an impactful move for them, for sure. And I think they're the right kind of team to do it. And I do think they have a roster built to maybe be able to withstand paying this kind, you know, this position that much money. But the Cowboys don't. I mean, they flat don't. They do not. They're not in the position to do that. They're in. They need way too much if they really want to win a Super Bowl. So I honestly, like, I genuinely think it was a great trade for both sides. The Packers are going to lose two firsts, but those are going to be late round firsts, most likely. And so for them, like, okay, we can withstand. It's sort of like what the Rams did when they pushed all their chips in with, you know, the famous F them picks quote from Les Snead. Like, that's kind of what this feels like. But it's not to get a quarterback. It's to get Micah Parsons.
Yeah, I'd like it on the record also that I picked the Packers to go to the Super Bowl yesterday morning before this trade even happened. I'd like to think that pick is more validated today than it was at the time yesterday. I certainly think that it is pushing their chips in, and the window is right now. It's not that they've got a bunch of old players. They don't. But the fact that they're not going to have firsts in the next couple of seasons, a lot of times, even if it's a late round first, look at a guy like Josh Simmons, by the way, for the Chiefs. Like, even a late round first can be majorly impactful for a team, even one of them, and they're giving up two. And so at that point, like, who knows what 3 years down the line will look like for the Packers, 4 years down the line, that sort of thing. So the window is now. The window is right now for them. Like, they signaled that for sure with the acquisition of Micah Parsons. And I do think that they are a team that they were a major impact defensive player away from having a really nice shot at being a legitimate Super Bowl contender. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that it's an arms race in the NFC North. That division is absolutely brutal, and we've gone through it before. You've got the Lions coming off of a number one seed in the NFC last year. You've got the Bears that they've loaded up, and they love what they've got in Caleb Williams, and they've got weapons all around him and built an offense to have him cook. You've got the Vikings with a ton of great skill players. The jury is still out on J.J. McCarthy. We just don't know until we actually see it, but they were a great team without him a season ago with Sam Darnold leading the charge. So it's a brutal division, and the Packers, they needed to keep pace, and there's no better way to keep pace than by going and acquiring possibly the most impactful defensive player in the NFL.
Well, and look, they're paying, right? They're already paying Jordan Love. Jordan Love's the second highest paid quarterback and second highest paid player in football, but they're not really paying anybody else. Like, the Cowboys are also paying CeeDee Lamb, right? And so this will hurt them after this year. We don't know yet how the contract is structured. So, like, none of the sites that track the cap have Parsons' true impact yet, because we don't know what years the money is going to. But it's going to be difficult. And I think what you have to also consider, the Packers have a lot of good young players. They're going to lose some of those players to free agency. There are two other trades to think about, I think, when you think about this. Well, the first one for us is the Tyreek Hill trade. So not only did the Chiefs land players, Trent McDuffie and Rashee Rice, most namely, in that trade for Tyreek Hill, they saved all that money, which has allowed them to re-sign Chris Jones. It's allowed them to re-sign Creed Humphrey. It's allowed them to re-sign Trey Smith. It's allowed them now to re-sign George Karloftis, make all kinds of moves in free agency, bring Hollywood Brown in. If they had paid Tyreek Hill what he ultimately got paid by the Dolphins, They wouldn't have McDuffie. They wouldn't have Rice. They probably wouldn't have at least Trey Smith. Who knows if they could have figured out how to do Chris Jones, who was already complicated anyway. The implications of that trade are far more than who they got with the draft picks. It's who they were able to re-sign with the money. And that is what I've said about Dallas forever. The money is the problem. They're not good enough to massage around it. They must be able to help Dak in every way they possibly can. Most notably right now will be to build up and pay an incredible offensive line. And at some point a run game, that's going to be their path. It flat is. And so paying Parsons so much of your cap, it just never made sense to me for that team.
You may completely disagree with this. I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat for a second and play conspiracy theorist for a sec.
Okay.
I think so. The Cowboys are over the next 2 years, the Cowboys have 4 first round picks in the next 2 years. I would be shocked if one of those picks, and it might be next year, it might be the year after, I don't know, but one of those 4 picks, I would be shocked if a pick is not a quarterback at some point. Maybe it's 2 years from now. I can't imagine it'd be next year, but maybe it's one of the first rounders 2 years from now. Some of that's going to be, you know, dependent on the quarterback classes and that sort of thing, if they like somebody. But at the end of the day, I think this also cracks open the door for potentially what a post-Dak Cowboy era could look like. Now, maybe I'm giving Jerry Jones too much credit to be that strategic a couple of years down the line at his age and the way that he operates. I don't know that. But I would be really surprised if one of those 4 first-round picks in the next 2 years doesn't end up being a quarterback.
The problem for Jerry is, and I'm not to be morbid, he wants this badly before he dies. And so I think that is what has hindered this. Dak takes too much grief. Dak is a better quarterback than he gets credit for. I will say that he'll be by the time that they're using those picks, he will be 34 years old with 1 year left on his contract and a potential out if they want to take some dead cap. So that would be the time to do it. Yes. And I think if the right player is there, they can also, like, if they identify a player that they love, like the Chiefs did with Mahomes, that's what you hope they do with it, right? You go identify that player and you make your move and you push all your chips in that way. I don't know that that's what Jerry Jones is going to do, because the better path to short-term success is to use all those picks and use all that money to bolster up now. There's a couple problems with that. The Cowboys, while they've been a great drafting team over the last decade or so, have not been as good the last couple of years. So as a Cowboys fan, you hope that's not a trend. And the other thing is, they may be the worst free agency team in football. They're terrible at it. They don't ever sign anybody. They pick the wrong players. So you're also trusting that they use this money correctly, that they're going to save, which, that's another big reach.
And on top of that, there's a major body of work as well over the years of, even when they have drafted well to bolster up their chances right away, they might win a bunch of games in the regular season, but they can never get it done in the postseason. And so there's no, clearly there's no guarantee that, even if, you know, Jerry wants to bolster up the team with these first round picks over the next 2 years, that he's going to draft the right players to not just win regular season games, but to get them over the hump of the playoffs, because that hasn't happened.
And look, the Herschel Walker trade, I'm sure that, you know, the newspaper headlines were the same. They're crazy, you know, and that built a dynasty. So they have to get it right in the aftermath, and Jimmy Johnson ain't there to help anymore. But I also, the other trade that keeps coming up is the Khalil Mack trade, and everyone's like, oh, well, how did that work out for the Raiders? And I'm like, how did it work out for the Bears? You can't put on rose-colored glasses. Like, that trade was a disaster for the Bears. And it didn't work out for the Raiders either, because they didn't do anything with what they got in return. It doesn't make it a good or bad trade. Like, it's a comparable trade when you want to talk about, like, what was acquired in anything. I'm looking at stuff this morning. Micah Parsons, like, there are analytics numbers that say he's been the best pass rusher over a four-season span, like, ever. And that's out there. Like, I believe he's on a trajectory only Reggie White could claim. Like, we're talking about a transcendent time player, and I get that. There are a couple of mistakes that the Cowboys made. A, giving Dak a new contract, and B, not getting this Parsons deal done and not being able to see enough ahead to do it a year or two ago when maybe they could have got him for $38 million or, you know, whatever it was. That's their own fault. They screwed too many things up.
They screwed that up. They probably, I mean, they could have got, we talked about it before, they could have re-signed Micah for, I don't know, $8 to $10 million less per year annually. Had they gotten ahead of it and not let other players reset the market over and over and over again, had they been a little bit more proactive in this, we would not be in this situation right now.
Myles Garrett was the first one to reset it, and then it got reset like three other times at 40. So even, you know, even if they could have gotten it done for him to reset it at 38, we're talking about almost a $10 million a year difference. So it's like a sequence of events that took it to this point, and at this point, paying him $47 million for 4 years just did not make any sense for the Cowboys. I do think it makes more sense for the Packers. Time will tell, because their roster will be depleted greatly soon because of this trade, both in the draft capital and the fact that they won't be able to re-sign a lot of players because they're paying Jordan Love and Micah Parsons so much money. When you have two of the highest paid players in football, the second now and the 10th, it's going to be tough. It is, and we'll see how that goes. Austin asks, in my opinion, is it time for Jerry to step down, or do I like what he's done? Well, A, he's not going to step down, so I honestly don't even waste my energy with that question. And I know a lot of Cowboys fans say Jerry Jones isn't going to step down, so it doesn't matter. Do I like what he's done? I think there are worse owners, for sure, but he hasn't gotten it done. So in that circumstance, I would say no. But at the same time, the Cowboys are relevant every year, so I'd rather be a Cowboys fan than a Browns fan or a Jaguars fan or lots of other teams in the NFL. I've always had a hard time with that question because, generally speaking, the Cowboys are always in the conversation, not just like by the drama either, Micah, but because they're usually 8 to 10 wins. And I say this all the time, like, I'll take the relevancy over what's a good example of a team that is, this doesn't really happen in the NFL where you get like a flash in the pan, like a 1 year champion, and then they're just irrelevant after that. But I would rather have the relevancy than like one great year and then be terrible every other year. That's just my opinion. I know everybody doesn't agree with that, but so, you know, whatever but he's not going to step down. I mean, it's his team.
I don't know if there's anything more frustrating than if you're a Cowboys fan getting so close to the top of the mountain every single year and never having enough to get it done. I mean, you have to go back 30 years, and every year for 30 years, like there have been a couple of anomalies in that time in the three decades since they last won a championship where they've been flat out bad. But that doesn't happen very often. You'd have to go back and look season by season to really break that down. But the majority of the time, they're in the conversation. They're in the mix. They are postseason teams. There's, you know, expectations and all of this. I don't know. It's a really difficult conversation, and I come from it as not a Cowboys fan at all. I can't even imagine getting so close to the promised land every single time, it seems like, and then it just never being able to get accomplished. It's both a credit to the Jones family for what they've built, where the relevancy is basically there from year into year out. But it's also a knock on them that they've never been able to put the entire puzzle together.
Damage done yesterday, even though the Royals are off. The Yankees and the Red Sox both win. That means they are now essentially 6.5 and 6 games behind them, 8.5 games behind Detroit. I think we can take all of that and we can put it to the side. Right now, this is a race against the Mariners. and they play the Mariners three times heads up before the end of this season. And they play Detroit. Look, if they did something special like sweep Detroit this weekend and get it to with 5.5 games, okay. I guess we'll start paying attention back to the division at that point. But I think the reality is it's going to be a race to the third spot between Seattle and Kansas City. That's certainly what it looks like here.
Yeah, it goes back to the analogy I've used several times about when you're playing poker and maybe you've got a flush that you're working on or something like that, and it's the number of outs you have when you get the turn and the flop and all of that. Like you have to really take a look at how many different paths do you have for a playoff berth, and it had been up until the last few days. Potentially, you had maybe all three wildcard spots that you were still battling for. That's probably not on the table right now. To your point, it's the Mariners. It's that third wildcard spot. You pretty much have one path to success, barring either an epic collapse from the Yankees and or Red Sox, and I guess maybe Tigers, and just a wild winning streak by the Royals. But those things are rare and probably unlikely to happen. I don't think we're going to see, New York fall apart like they did when Aaron Judge was on the shelf, all of that. Like, I think they're going to round into form and continue to do what they've been doing. Same thing with the Red Sox. So really the outs are limited now. I think for the Royals to find their way to the playoffs, it's not out of the woods, not out of the question, but especially considering they're going to be playing Seattle straight up not too long from now. It's going to be a lot more difficult for them.
And the reality is, and the cliches I don't think have ever fit more than they fit for Kansas City right now, which is, who cares about any of that other stuff? The reality is they got to win a ton of games down the stretch to have a chance anyway. So just focus on winning a ton of games, just do that for now and see how this falls. Get all of the wins that you can. And if it's enough, it's enough. If it's not, it's not. Detroit, the series lines up this weekend. It'll be Lugo going tonight, Noah Cameron on Saturday, and Michael Wacha on Sunday. Wacha gets the great task of facing Tarek Skubal. So the pitching, I think, lines up the way you want it to, even with Lugo being a little bit shaky. I think the things for Quatraro that we talked about with Lorenzen also hold true right now with Seth Lugo. You just had a day off. You're going to have Monday off, Tommy. So 2 days off. There is absolutely no reason right now for the Royals to not have everybody available if there are any signs of trouble early tonight from Seth Lugo. If he is in a spot where he clearly does not have it, and it is the first damn inning, I don't care. You got to get him out, protect him a little bit. You've just had a day off and you got another one coming in 3 days. Like, unload the bullpen if you have to today.
Yeah, this may be a glass half empty kind of thought with the way the weekend series is panning out for the Royals, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Lugo has not been sharp since the All-Star break. He was better in his last start, but still not incredible. So he's not been sharp. Noah Cameron did not have a good start his last time out. He's come back down to earth a little bit. He's your Saturday starter. And then Michael Wacha is facing Tarek Skubal on Sunday. So we've looked at series before and pitching matchups and all of that where you can sort of have a blueprint for a road to winning a series or potentially sweeping another team or whatever. When you're taking on the first place team in your division, I know it's at home and everything. I don't love the pitching prospects this weekend in honestly any game. And hopefully I'm proven wrong. Hopefully Lugo and Cameron can turn things around and Wacha can hold his own against Tarek Skubal. It's going to be a major challenge all three games this weekend.
I think you thought I was a little bit crazy a couple of weeks ago when I told you the thing I think that worries me the most down the stretch for the Royals is the starting pitching. Are you with me a little bit now? Do you see what I'm kind of meaning there? Like, I don't trust Lorenzen. I don't trust Lugo. Noah Cameron, I trust Noah Cameron, but it is still he's overperforming from anybody's expectations. Like, there are a lot of things where it's like, and Burgert, as good as he's been as a rookie, like, it's just like all of it feels a little shaky to me, as great as they've been all year. We're to the point of the season now where they may run out of gas. And it may be the thing, which is so ironic, that it's the thing that saved them for most of the season while the offense sputtered. And now that the offense is hitting, the starting pitching to me seems very, very vulnerable. But I agree. Seth Lugo, since that trade, his ERA has raised. I mean, since that signing, his ERA has risen about a run and a half. Here's how many runs he's given up in all those games, Tommy. And I don't remember the exact date of the trade, but I'm going to take you back to July 18th, which I believe was around the time after, right after he got the deal. 5-2-3-2-7-6-2-6. That was that's how many earned runs he's allowed in that time. He's given up at least two home runs in all but two of those games. And so we're looking at 9 starts. He's given up two home runs in 7 of those 9 starts. That, like, it's not just a little concerning with Lugo. Something's not right, clearly. Because we have a long track record now of Seth Lugo to know, like, he's never had a stretch like this before. Something isn't right with Seth Lugo. And if that's the case, don't let him against this team go out there and get shelled for 6 runs in 4 innings. If there are any signs of trouble with him, pull him out of the game. You have a completely rested pitching staff with a day off coming. Like, empty it all out in this series if you have to.
Yeah, it's not going to be, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't think that any game this weekend against the Tigers needs to be a game where, whether we're talking Matt Quatrero or the starting pitchers themselves, where their pride and ego gets in the way, where it's like, well, we have to have this starter go 5 innings or 6 innings or whatever. It's no, like, treat this like a playoff series. Treat this like a best of 3 playoff series where you have to, at home, and that's the benefit, you get all 3 of them at home. You have to have a short enough leash where, at any sign of trouble, and I'm not even just talking about the Lugo start, I'm talking about Cameron's start. He wasn't very good his last time out. The Waka start against Tarik Skubal, you're not probably going to get a whole lot of run support on Sunday. You've got to make sure that you are putting your team at least within striking distance to be able to be competitive. One positive, one good note about the Royals is that in the last 2 games against the White Sox, and really even, I think, dating back to probably the All-Star break and maybe even the beginning of July, the Royals have been a lot more clutch offensively. So if they're within striking distance of the Tigers, and if you can stay in the game, even if you're down a run, down 2 runs, whatever, the Royals offensively lately have shown that they can prop up the pitching. They can get themselves back into a ball game. But the only way you can have that happen is if you've got a short enough leash to be able to stop the bleeding if it does happen. Yep. I don't care if it's in the 2nd inning, the 4th inning, the 6th inning. You have to be more aggressive. And I'm looking at Matt Quatrero on this. You have to be more aggressive in going to your bullpen. Do not sit on your hands and hang on to your starter like you did in the game when Michael Lorenzen started the other night. You cannot afford that.
Well, no, not against this. Really not against anybody down the stretch. I don't think they have one of these brutal. After Monday, they go to a stretch where they'll play September 2nd through the. They don't have a lot of days off there until the 22nd. Is that right? 20 straight days without a day off? Holy moly! This series is just. This is probably the only one where they get this luxury, I guess, is the point. So take advantage. It's the Tigers. They're going to be tougher to come back on. There's absolutely no reason to get yourself down in a hole like that if you don't have to. And look, Lugo did have his start against the Rangers was great. 6 1/3, 2 earned runs like that. That's great. Maybe that's in there too. You don't have to like panic. But I think we've all watched these Lugo starts and been like, yeah, he doesn't have it tonight. Like, it's been pretty obvious right out of the gates. Like, he is throwing batting practice right now. And if you see that, the second you see it, you got to get him out of there. You just have to. And the offense is going to have to help you out. The Tigers probably won't be quite as prolific playing at Kauffman Stadium, but we'll find out. You'll hear the game tonight right here on KFH. You can tune in at 7 for the 7:10 first pitch. You can also listen at kfhradio.com or download it for free on the Odyssey app. Hey, if you want to win some iced tea, do it right now. 2 gallons for $10 this weekend, by the way, through the holiday is always a great deal when you can get them 2 for $10. So go in there, grab you a couple gallons for whatever the Labor Day festivities bring your way. And while you're in there, maybe you can get a free tea if you win right now by texting the keyword tea to 20357. That's TEA to 20357. Good for East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby. When we come back, our golf guy, Eric Johnson, going to talk a little Ryder Cup with us here. To be perfectly honest, Tommy and Eric are going to have more to say about that, and I'll just, my ignorance will probably shine through. But I like it. I like the Ryder Cup. Don't really get it, but I love it because it's USA versus somebody else, and I'm always on board with that. Wait at next on Sports Daily.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.